Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with dancer, choreographer, director of Broadway musicals, Jeff Calhoun. And I'm playing one of the songs from the score of his most recent musical, that is Newsies, which is not only up for a Tony by itself, but for which Jeff is also up for a Tony. Listen to the interesting story of how Jeff went from a boy fascinated by dance, especially tap dance, to a director of Broadway musicals. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about finding, discovering, uncovering, recovering any part of yourself which for any reason at all you have needed to deny. I quite often say it may seem odd to think that you would need to deny parts of yourself, but in fact, almost all of us are denying some part of ourselves. This is not the kind of denial where you pretend to be something you're not, where you pretend that you know the answer to something that you don't actually know the answer to, or, you know, that kind of thing that we're all sort of fudging a little bit. No, this means being really in denial for it, that is, not actually knowing something that is true of yourself. It may seem odd, but I believe, and my more than 30 years as a psychotherapist seems to bear out, that most, maybe all of us, come out of childhood having put aside, hidden, or in denial for at least some aspects of ourselves. Whatever it was that didn't work in our childhood, we first are embarrassed by, then pretend we don't have, and finally forget altogether. So we come into adulthood believing that we just don't cry, or we're not that smart, or we don't get angry. when in fact we do have tears we haven't cried, and anger we haven't felt, and intelligence we haven't used or demonstrated. You can see that life would be better if you had access to all of who you are. And so the Lynn Show is about first making the point that it's possible that there's a part of you that you have not had access to, have not been able to use. And if you think that that's so, and maybe even have some idea of what it might be, then what you might do to recover it, what might get in the way of such recovery, and there are obstacles to recovery, even of those things which we could really use. A lot of this information is in the past shows, all of which are in podcast on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow.com, and also in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, which you can also find on the website. The other thing that I do in the show is interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because in order to be an artist in this culture, it has to be who you really are, at least in the area of their work. Artists are who they really are. What you see is what you get, or got. In psychotherapeutic terms, this is called congruence. We are congruent. What we're demonstrating is what is actually there. And when you listen to these interviews, you can hear the congruence, the complete in-syncness of the person with his or her art. Today, I am playing an interview that I did with Jeff Calhoun, who is a dancer, a choreographer, and a director of musicals. And when you listen to Jeff, you will hear that congruence. You will hear Jeff say that he knew from the age of 8 or 9 that dance was in his DNA, that was who he is. And you will also hear him talk about the importance of the support that he got from his parents. So much of what we have to deny, we deny because it was not acceptable to our parents. And so you will hear what I believe, which is that the more our parent accepts about who we are, the less we have to hide or pretend. And with Jeff, you can hear that he embraced his DNA, his dancer, from a very young age, and he really never looked back. It's a wonderful story, full of interesting and surprising twists and turns. And Jeff is so engaging, so clearly alive to his art, to his work. And I know that you're going to enjoy it, as you will hear me enjoying this interview. I did this interview with Jeff when he was about to open Bonnie and Clyde the musical on Broadway, and you'll hear him talking about it. I'm replaying it now as we are waiting to hear if he has won the Tony for directing Newsies, which is his next play, on his next musical on Broadway. So after the interview, I will be playing a song from the smash hit musical Newsies, for which I hope Jeff Calhoun will win his Tony. So here, Jeff Calhoun. I am here with Jeff Calhoun in his amazing apartment, which he just renovated and is a set for the dynamic Jeff Calhoun. So I haven't explained to him. I interview people who make their living or their life within art. Does that describe you, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I never thought I could do it, but yes, it does describe me.
Yeah. It's clear. So, okay, so I always ask the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it get started? What was the very beginning, the first inkling that the art, which, and come to think of it, is the art
theater? Is the art dance? Is the art directing? What is the art that you would say you mostly give your life to?
For me, well, it's a different thing. The inkling was being a kid and watching the Carol Burnett Show and the Ernie Flat Dancers would be on every week. And I would
How
say
old
to my,
were you?
Oh, wow, you know, nine, eight, nine. Right. And I would say to my parents, I want to do that. How can I do what they do?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom said, well, you can go to, you know, dance class. My father was like, you don't want to go to dance class.
Oh, really?
I said, well, I want to do what they do. I want to be an Ernie Flat Dancer. So that was really the spark, was that.
Okay, now, wait. So it was okay with your mother? She didn't have any Boys Don't Dance?
Not at all.
Your father had a little Boys Don't Dance?
Yeah, I think initially.
Yeah.
Yeah, initially.
The sort of knee-jerk.
I don't think you encourage it.
Right.
You know,
right.
My parents have always supported me, but I don't think.
That was his first choice. He didn't say, gee, what I wanted to dance.
That's right. When he knew it was a passion, he supported it 100%.
Good for him.
But just my flip answer of I wanted to dance like that, I'm sure he wanted to be sure it was a real, you know, passion.
But that's a very sweet thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very sweet thing to say about a parent. A lot of parents wouldn't have been able to do that.
No, my parents have been supportive of everything that I've ever done. This business, it's so hard making a living as an artist that, and I have a lot of friends that aren't as fortunate as I with their a good family background, that I don't know how I would do it without that support.
No, I think it's
just
really
so difficult. It helps.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true, and I'd like to talk more about that. Yeah. But, so, you're watching this, and your mother says, so do you take dance lessons? Is that what happens?
That's exactly right. So she looked up and found a dance studio, and she started taking me to dance class. And, but also watching, you know, Dick Van Dyke on television.
Whose every move is a dance.
Yeah, he, you know, at the start of da 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 I would set up the ottoman in our house, and every time I would do it with him.
Oh,
I would do the same practical every single day. I'd come home from school Monday through Friday, and I would do it just with Dick Van Dyke. I wanted to be Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the Ernie Flat Dancers. I wanted to be, of course, Fred Astaire.
Right.
So, Ken Barry. Do you remember Ken Barry? He was the star of F Troop.
Oh, yes.
But he used to also be a guest star on Carol Burnett Show all the time. And he was a great tap dancer and a Broadway song and dance man.
Wow.
And then Arthur Duncan on, it was called The Lawrence Welk Show.
Oh, yes.
And he was the tap dancer. And no matter what I was doing, my parents would yell out on Sundays if I was out in the yard playing and said, come on in, Mr. Duncan's on TV. And I'd run in and I'd watch, you know, I wanted to be Arthur Duncan. So that was the spark for me, watching people on TV.
But it was clear to you.
Yeah.
The minute you saw it, you said, that's mine. You know, I want to do that, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, no doubt about that.
That's really interesting to me. I mean, lots of kids might have said, gee, that's interesting. I mean, I did. I thought, gee, it would be lovely to move like that. And it's not the same as what happened to you.
It's in your blood.
Yes, right. It was.
Yeah, it's in your DNA.
I think that's right.
Absolutely.
I think that's exactly right. Okay, so we have you at 9 or 10 or whatever, dancing.
That's
and,
right.
And so then what?
Boy, and then the next step, I guess, was to be in community theater. So
when?
I did children's theater. 11, 12. You know, I was Brer Rabbit.
So how did that happen? I mean, did you say, gee, they have this play? Did somebody, did your mom, did somebody, did the teacher?
Good question. No, I think it's just we had a very famous community theater called the North Star Players. And they had a children's theater. So my mom brought me to audition for that. And I did, for as long as I can remember, Mr. Popper's Penguins. I was in Brer Rabbit, Heidi.
Everything.
Know, everything. And
is this because you were already a good dancer, or because you...
It was, yes. I certainly was not a great singer, as Mrs. Rhodes always reminded me. She was the musical director.
She said, you're not a great singer?
Yeah, that's exactly what she said, actually. Yeah.
Really?
There was a song in Heidi where I was supposed to go, hear the mountains calling you, Heidi, Heidi, but I couldn't go calling you. It was too high for me. So she made me go, hear the mountains calling you, Heidi, Heidi. But anyway, so I was at all those shows. And, I was a tap dancer at that point. I'd been studying for years. And, you know, boys, at that age, I think it's hard to get boys interested in being in shows. So when anyone wants to, I think they just take you.
Right. They're
whether you're
to
talented
dance.
Or
right.
not.
Right.
Yeah. And so...
But you were.
I just did community theater, children's theater. Then I jumped up from the children's theater to the adult community theater. And mind you, in school, I would do all the musicals in school. Mm-hmm. Even when I was in junior high, I was in the high school musicals.
Okay, so now you're acting too, are you not?
Well, it depends who you ask.
Well, you know what, I had lines. I mean, role. That's
yeah,
right,
I had
right,
lines.
Right.
I look back and I was just a terrible actor.
But you must have been a great dancer.
I was a good dancer, but I was so enthusiastic about it.
You loved
audience
it.
Audience always talked about, yes, how excited I seemed to be there.
Yeah.
And that's what got me through. You know, I had a good sense of humor, and I was a good tap dancer. But other than that, I just enjoyed being there. Mm-hmm. But it was clear to me that, you know, directing was really the direction I wanted to go.
When did you discover that?
Well, in high school, I don't know how this happened, but I got the school board to give me English credit if I did an all-student production of Godspell. So there were no adults involved, and that was my English credit my senior year. And it was, I directed it and choreographed it, and
so you haven't, nobody has shown you how to do this, you haven't studied it, you've had so much experience.
Actually, that was my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to my senior year, 2 years before my senior year, when I was 16 years old, I got a job dancing with Ann Miller in Anything Goes at the Kenley Players.
Wow.
My dance teacher was choreographer for the Kenley Players. The Kenley Players is a great summer stock circuit in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 16 and in professional theater. That's when I got my equity card. So I was watching pros direct and pros choreograph, so I was really learning a lot.
Right.
So then when I went back to school, I was eager to put that to use
and
direct my own show. And yeah.
So you were you were directing by the time you were a high school senior.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, really.
It is amazing.
I was very lucky. I have a very blessed sort of life.
Yeah. And I hear this, not uncommonly, this, it just fell into place for me. I mean, I don't know, it just, you know, the things were there and I was there and...
I mean, it's hard work.
That does not diminish
but
the... Right.
Absolutely. It's a miracle, you know, when I look back. But you're right, everything did, and it's the people you meet. Not only did I have great support from my mom and dad, but another adult, and the best dance teachers. I mean, my tap teacher was Gene Kelly's tap teacher.
Oh, my goodness.
So my jazz teacher was the choreographer, as I mentioned, from the Kenley Players.
Right.
And so going to the Kenley Players is where I met Tommy Toon.
Oh, my goodness.
And Tommy Toon became my mentor for the next 23 years. So,
right.
I mean, it's just...
Right.
Kids ask me, how do you get into the business? And the truth is, you just pursue your path, and for every artist, there is a different path.
Right.
So there's not just one way of doing it. That's the beauty of it.
Right. And also, the complication of it is that you can't say to anybody how it's done.
No, you really can't.
No. And you can't say how it will happen for you if it's going to happen. And
no,
that's
exactly
difficult
right.
for people, I think.
No, it's also why I feel such a responsibility when I discover new talent or young talent. I try to do what I can to pay back because Tommy was so good to me. And in this business, you learn from your mentors. I mean, this is a business that you have to see it and study it to learn it. You can't just watch movies and watch TV. You have to be part of the process.
Right.
And that's what I was. You know, Tommy at the time was sort of the king of Broadway.
Yes.
It was the 80s, and he was really on top. And I got, you know, firsthand to watch him create original musicals.
But you see...
And you can't learn that in college or out of books.
No,
you know,
but what he saw in you... This is, you're saying what you saw in him, but what I'm thinking is what he saw in you. And what he saw in you...
Another
was,
tall, skinny, white tap dancer. He's like, oh.
No, he saw the DNA.
Yeah, I
you
think
know,
that's
he
probably
saw,
true.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
You know, he saw, I have to do this, I will do this.
Yeah.
You know... And that's, it's irresistible. That's what I think. So, okay, so where did you find Tommy?
At the Kenley Players. He was doing the leading player in Pippin.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the ensemble. And because I was the tallest one, Equity says, our union says, that every part has to have an understudy. So they made me Tommy's understudy. Now, I was 16 years old. There was no way I was going on as
right,
a leading player,
right,
you know.
Right.
But... I had to do understudy rehearsals, and I was the closest one to fitting into his costumes, so I got that job.
Yet
and because
again.
I was understudy, I think there was a special bond between us, and just the proximity of having to learn his part and always watching him because I was the understudy, that we became, you know, fast friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the most exotic creature I had ever, you know, being a kid from Pittsburgh, I never met anybody that looked or acted like Tommy.
Right.
You know, he was very...
Well, now, you're not,
No, Tommy was very exotic.
But not just
I'm
to
not
a kid
really
from Pittsburgh.
Exotic, yeah. I was a football player, you know, quarterback, Midwestern, you know, tap dancer. Tommy was very exotic. I remember at the pool, he had silver toenails. And for a six, that was a lot. That was a little freaky for me. It's like, do you know that your toenails are going to hit? Of course you did. It's quite an education at 16, let me tell you. Yeah. But the best thing that ever happened to me, and next to my parents, he's the most influential adult in my life.
Yeah. But again, I mean, you know, how many people, you know, ran into Tommy Toon and became his object? I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. Okay. All right, so... You're 16, and Tommy becomes your mentor. Mm-hmm.
So, the Kenley Players always did, you could be in four shows a summer. I could never do the fourth show because I had to get back to football practice. But then once I hurt myself in football, I had my knee bent backwards.
Yeesh.
Then I became drum major. But I still had to miss the fourth show because then I had to go back for band practice. So I only did three shows a summer, but for 3 years. And then it was after my first... Then I went to Northwestern, where I was in all their shows as a freshman. Liberal arts. They wouldn't let you declare as a freshman, so it was just a basic liberal arts courses. But I choreographed a show there, too, which was fun, which they said a freshman had never done before. But since I was already a professional for 3 years, they let me do it. And then I remember I was going to come back the next year as a, what would be your second year in college, as a sophomore. And I was going to direct Seesaw with Jane Atkinson. But I never went back, because that's when Tommy called me and my parents and asked if I would travel in a show called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, starring Alexis Smith. And after much debate and conversation, they acquiesced and they allowed me to leave college to tour with the Whorehouse.
Wow.
And I, as long as I promised that when the tour ended, I would go back to college. at the time, I think I really
meant it.
I did mean it at the time, but there was no. Once I got a taste of that, and it seemed silly to go back to school to learn to do what
you were already
paying me
doing.
To do. So that was really it, and then it just went from there. And I was in the chorus of many shows, and then you know I was in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers on Broadway, and they let me actually have a few lines.
Uh-huh.
And then, once again, it was Tommy Toon who did a show with Twiggy called My One and Only.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to take 2 weeks off to go put together the national tour of another Broadway show he directed called Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me to replace him for those 2 weeks on Broadway.
Uh-huh.
Now, the show had won Best New Musical, the Tony Award. He had won the Tony for Best Actor in a Musical. He had won the Tony for Best Director of a Musical, and he had won the Tony for the Best Choreographer of that show. And I was going to replace him. It was frightening. It was absolutely frightening. And but that was thrilling. And at the end of those 2 weeks, I married Twiggy 16 times. I got to dance with Honey Coles. I don't know if you know
Honey
Coles.
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
That was probably the highlight of my performing career, was doing that Act 2 tap number with Honey Coles 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at the end of those 2 weeks... Chances were, even though it went well, the odds were I was not going to take the final bow in a Broadway show for quite some time, if ever again. And so I closed the door on performing, went out on a high, and went, okay, it's time now for me to pursue my choreographing career.
Wow.
And that's what I did. I moved to LA, and I took any dinner theater job, any benefit job. Unfortunately, AIDS had just come in.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time they even printed the word AIDS in the New York Times. And there was a benefit in California at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and it was called Hollywood Salute to Broadway. And they asked me to direct this benefit. And Bob Hope was our host, the surgeon C. Everett Koop, if you remember him.
I do.
He was there. And we had we reunited the original cast of Chorus Line, every one of them in the original costumes. We got the original Dream Girls. Now, you mind you, these shows had just, you know, were... It wasn't like 40 years ago.
No.
They were still hot. And Michael Bennett had just passed away from AIDS. Mm-hmm. So it was very profound to have the Chorus Line people there. And Tommy Tune came out and did a number, and Sandy Duncan, and it was just a star-studded event. And that really launched me directing, and I feel badly that it was on the back of AIDS, but it was the first AIDS benefit west of the Mississippi, and it was a big hit. And then I got a phone call from a gentleman named Alan Carr. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you remember Alan Carr. Very big, great raconteur, but he was a really an impresario of sorts. He discovered Village People and Bruce Jenner, and Alan Carr is a remarkable man. Anyway, he called me because he was doing a benefit at the Hollywood Bowl called Broadway at the Bowl, and he asked me if I would direct it. And still, I'm in my 20s, so this is a very exciting thing, and that was Placido Domingo was our host, and I had Mary Martin and Placido end Act One singing Some Enchanted Evening. You know, it was B. Arthur and Yvette DiCarlo, I mean, Yvonne DiCarlo, and Patti LuPone, Carol Channing. It was a Tommy Tune again. It was just, I was so blessed. And that went well too, so all of a sudden I just started getting calls to do these benefits. So I really learned a lot about directing, doing benefits, and recreating my one and only in dinner theaters and regional theaters up and down the coast of California, because they would hire me because I knew the original blocking and choreography.
Right.
So that's what they were hiring.
Right.
But because, you know, the cast is different and each theater is slightly different, you kind of direct, although you're stealing. I basically stole Tommy's work, but then started to give it my own little flair, and that was sort of the beginnings of it. And it just, and Tommy watched. He flew out. Tommy, this is how supportive he was. He flew to California, and not only were he in these benefits for me, but he watched every show that I choreographed and directed. And after, I don't know, 3 or 4 years of that, he said, I think you're finally ready. I'm doing a show called The Will Rogers Follies. And Cy Coleman is writing the music, and Betty Comden and Adolph Green are doing the lyrics, and Peter Stone is writing the book, and would you come be my associate choreographer? I said, sure, I have nothing better to do. And my job on that show, because Tommy, you know, new musical, Tommy was really busy working with the creatives, the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job was to create dances that looked like Tommy Tune choreographed them.
Right.
And he reminded me that usually when he choreographs a show, he wins the Tony for it. And there was my assignment.
So, create dances that I'll be proud of and I can win the Tony for?
Yeah. You want to know what? That's exactly what happened.
Oh my God!
That's exactly what happened. And because that happened, thank God it happened,
yes.
Because that launched, you know, my career
in the
big time.
No,
because had I not delivered there, I don't know what would have happened.
But he must have known you were.
So that was
this is an amazing story.
Yeah. I haven't thought about those stories or talked about them out loud for a long time, if ever, actually. It's interesting to think about your past, isn't it?
Yes.
Or to be old enough to have a past.
Well,
when did that happen? When did I become old enough to have a past? Holy cow.
Okay, but it's a perspective, right?
Yeah.
Is what it is. Okay, so when was this and what happened after that?
Well, that was 1991, mm-hmm. and it won the Tony in 1992. And then the Weislers, famous Broadway producers, were going to revive a little-known show called Grease, and starring Rosie O'Donnell. It was going to be her Broadway debut. And they asked Tommy to direct it. Well, it wasn't really Tommy's taste, let's just say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he goes, you know, Grease, directing a revival of Grease is not really right for me. However, I have groomed this kid who is ready. His name is Jeff Calhoun, and I think he should direct the show. And so that was sort of my directing debut, directing Grease. And Tommy was sort of the insurance policy.
Right.
So if it wasn't working or if there was trouble,
everybody felt
they could bring in Tommy
him.
And he would come
right.
in. And he was very instrumental in helping us design the show. But then he went away and he came back, I think it was dress rehearsal, and saw the show and gave some notes, very good notes, and so that launched my real directing career on Broadway. Yeah.
Good grief.
Yeah.
It's a long
time ago.
It's an extraordinary, I mean, it's like, it's a one leap to another leap to another leap. Do you know
or
I mean?
One hurdle and another hurdle. Because each time you start a show, I feel like you're climbing Mount Everest. because you're starting from zero. You don't know, you know, you're like, oh my God, it's insurmountable. And then one step at a time, and then you're on top of it looking down going, wow.
Wow.
And then you think it gets easier.
Doesn't.
It doesn't.
Does it get harder?
Each time, no. But each time it's as difficult. Because each time you're starting, even though you have more experience, I'm sure athletes would say the same thing. Does it get easier, even though you're a pro, to play on Sundays? I think it's just as hard every time. You know what to expect, but you still sweat as much. You still have to use as much muscle. You still... You
actually,
know,
I think that...
It's the same.
I was actually thinking that it might be harder in the sense that you have this... You have something... to continue proving. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
it's harder if you're like a Tommy Toon and you're on top.
Right.
It's hard to stay there.
Yes.
Because what are
and
the chances
of
everything
there,
you
right.
do is a masterpiece?
No, that's right. And the pressure.
So that's a different league. I've never been in that league, so I don't know. You know, I don't
you mean
have
not
to,
yet?
I don't have to, you know, stay on top. That's one advantage of not being on top. I don't have to stay there. I can stay right in the middle. But no, it's not easier and it's not hard. Each one of them is really different. And there's fear. Each time you go through the same process, you know, you're afraid, oh my God, can I do this? Is it going to be any good? Because your worst nightmare is that an audience just sits there and just hates it.
Yeah.
And you know, you work just as hard on flops as you do hits.
Of course.
You know, so...
So have you had any flops?
But it doesn't get easier. Oh, I've had... You can't call yourself a professional if you haven't had flops. I've been lucky. I've seen it at the top. You know, I've had shows that have won Tony Awards, and then I've had shows that have... opened on a Thursday and closed on a Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, that's
God, that
the
must
nature.
Be devastating.
It is devastating because you've spent years on that show.
Right.
There's a show very dear to my heart called Brooklyn that I love so much that I not only directed it and choreographed it, but I produced it.
Oof.
And I'll never do that again either.
Right.
You know, because it ran 9 months. We had a tour, but the critics were not kind. And therefore, you know, the entire capitalization was lost. And I just couldn't take that family and friends lost that kind of money.
Right.
Because I really believed I was doing everyone a favor.
Right.
I was sure this was the next Rent.
Right.
I was positive. Shows you what I know, you know.
Wow.
So
God,
it was
that
devastating,
is hard.
Yeah. At the time, it was a $6.5 million musical, and it lost every dime. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, you have flops, absolutely. I've also been called in to shows that were in trouble that ultimately became flops as a show doctor. So there's also that way to have a flop.
Oy,
not your flop.
Right?
That's boy. I know that Yiddish word.
Yeah, right.
No.
Yeah, right.
I've had a lot of all these, you know, I don't like to talk about those because those were other people's expense and their dreams
yeah.
that I tried to help make
right.
better, but it was their dream.
Well, you know, I think that there's just no way to know when a thing is going to be
you don't know. And you get too close. You know, when you fall in love with something, it's like, it must be like children.
Yes.
You know, you're so close to them, you don't really see it for what it is. Because you love them unconditionally, and that's how I am with my shows. And it's not for me to judge it. I have to just love it and do the best I can, and hopefully the audience
will see
like
it.
Your
like
child
it.
The way you
right.
do.
Right.
You know, it doesn't always work that way, but that's all you can hope for.
Right. Okay, so, is there anything else that you want to tell me about this? Anything else that stands out as part of your journey?
No, I always feel self-conscious talking about it because it just seems so boring to me.
Oh, God, it's not
it
boring.
It really does. It
trust
just feels
me.
Like, okay.
Trust me, this is not
right,
boring.
Okay.
It's so interesting. So talk to me about Bonnie and Clyde and how that happened.
Oh, Bonnie and Clyde. Talk about another one that's close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping, you know what I don't have? I don't have that original show that's a hit, you know?
Your own.
Yeah, I think as a director, my dream, I don't know if everyone, but for me, I want to know that I created a show that long after I'm gone, high schools are doing it and hopefully inspiring some new kid to want to be in the business because of that show, you know? And I'm hoping that Bonnie and Clyde may be that.
Mm.
The last time I thought it was Brooklyn was going to be that. It wasn't. Although schools do that occasionally. Not the same kind of thing. So I'm hoping Bonnie and Clyde will be that show that outlives all of its creators.
So how did it happen?
Frank Wildhorn, the composer, we were put together, a friend of ours, Paul Tatro, who runs the Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C., He said, you know what, I think you and Frank would work well together. And Jeff, you need, you know, you need a composer to work with. And Frank, quite frankly, he didn't feel Frank had the right director in his life. So we met and instantly sort of became like brothers.
Right.
Yeah. I love Frank like a brother. And however, he kept giving me demos of his shows. And as much as I liked Frank and as much as I was a fan of Frank, none of the scores that he gave me spoke to me. Until, I would say this was probably a year later, it may have been his sixth show he gave me, and this one was different. There were three songs, and I heard these songs and I called Frank immediately, because I couldn't. He gave it to me at night, we had dinner, I played them all night long, I almost didn't sleep. I just kept listening to him going, am I crazy? Are these as good as I think they are? And then the next morning I was rehearsing this show, I forget what show I was rehearsing, but I played it for all the creatives. I said, what do you think? Do you guys like this song? They go, yeah. I go, now listen to this. And I played them the second song and they liked it. I said, now listen to this. And everyone agreed it was an amazing three songs. So I called Frank and I said, Frank, I love this. And I didn't mean it to come out this way, but I said, these are so good it doesn't even sound like
you
wrote them. And I didn't mean that, of course, but it just was different than the other material he mm-hmm. had given me. And so I said, can I do the show? And he goes, absolutely. And so that was really it. And I had a friend named Ivan Menchow, mm-hmm. who had never written a Broadway musical, but I had read many of his scripts, and I knew how talented he was and how funny he was. And I called Frank, I called Ivan, and said, you wanted to write a show? And he said, absolutely. I flew out. I mean, you know the story. Yeah. I flew out to L.A., and I played him these three songs, and he also fell in love with them. And then Don and Frank, who were already a team on the show, they had already written many songs, welcomed Ivan and I into the fold as its creatives.
Wow.
So yeah, and then I did a show at the Mark Taper Forum called Pippin mm-hmm. with Def West. And closing night of Pippin, this is how fortuitous, this is just how the business works. I flew back out for the closing. Well, I don't fly out to all the closings. I just felt an affinity for this show, and working with the deaf has become a passion for me, and that's what Pippin was. Half the cast was deaf, so the whole show was signed and voiced. But anyway, I flew back for the closing, and there at the closing backstage was Chris Ashley, who is the artistic director of the La Jolla Playhouse.
Uh-huh.
And he also gave me sort of a backhanded compliment. He said, after seeing the show, he goes, well, Jeff, I didn't know you were that smart. And I said, thank you, I think. He goes, listen, I'm running the La Jolla Playhouse now. Is there anything, you know, if you ever have anything, let me know. And I said, well, I can't believe this. I just happen to have something. And the next day, I sent him the script. And a week later, he called me and said, let's do this at La Jolla. And that was how it began. And that's where we did that a year before Sarasota. And it was based on the success of La Jolla that Michael Edwards came, saw the show. We were looking for the next developmental stage for the show, and it turned out to be the Osler Theater.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now...
And now Broadway...
Yes.
...will be... Usually takes me three times to get a show right, to get it as good as it can be. And this will be the... Broadway will be the third incarnation.
So you're going to change it much?
Oh, yes.
Oh, tell me.
Yeah, well... First of all, a short show is a happy show, mm-hmm. and I felt like Act 2 felt too long.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're taking a good 10 or 15 minutes out of the show.
What do you know yet what you're taking out?
Well, literally, sometime today, I will get a call from Ivan, or I will call Ivan, and we will work on the show.
Okay,
so
right,
it changes
okay.
every day. But yeah, we do know. We've already taken out about 12 minutes.
Great.
Much of it is Act 2.
Mm-hmm.
We're reworking one of the songs, and we've cut one of the songs. There's a song called Too Late to Turn Back Now that they sang after they killed their first person.
Yeah.
And we were asking that song in lyric to do too many things. It's such a big moment for somebody, the first time you actually kill somebody,
right.
that we were speeding through that moment.
And with the song.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So now Ivan has it in their home, and there's going to be a scene where Bonnie actually learns what has just happened. And, of course, when she learns this, she realizes now her dream of going to Hollywood and being a star has just evaporated.
Right.
Because her boyfriend is now a murderer.
Right.
And so we're developing that. That's too important.
As a scene.
Yeah, as a scene.
Right.
And then that song will then work in and come out of that scene.
Right, right.
So I'm very excited about that.
just to use it with the song.
You're absolutely right. It became, right. That's exactly right.
Right.
But you don't know that until
no,
you see
no,
it.
That's right. And I didn't realize it until you said it.
No, you can read something on a page, but until you actually see it on the stage.
Mm-hmm. And I love that song.
You don't know. So. Well, it's one of my favorite songs.
Right.
And some people were advocates of cutting it because they knew it was a problem area in the show. But the solution wasn't to cut the song, it was to motivate it and earn it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what we're doing now. It's great fun, and to have someone like Ivan, who, I mean, a lot of people use genius and just sort of throw it out, and I don't, but I do believe Ivan is a genius. And that he's so willing to just rewrite, and nothing is precious for him.
Ooh.
And I think as an artist, you have to be that way too. You can't be too married to anything. You have to be willing to explore and to make better.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that it's very hard, though. Because it's like what you were saying about the children thing. You know,
well,
that
it's
you
hard because you don't want to overpaint.
Right. Or underpaint.
Or that's the trick, is to know when is it ready. But that's why it leads me back to what I said. It takes me usually 3 times to feel like, okay, this is the best it can be right now. But that's what's beautiful and painful about this business is you can create a show, and like Grease ran 4 years on Broadway, and every time I went back to watch it, I was in a different place in my life. So I always wanted to keep changing it, but you can't. It's what it is, and you send it out
into
the
world. And it's working.
And you go,
right.
And it's working.
Right. It ain't broke.
But it's so hard for me because, you know, your work only reflects where you are in life at that moment.
Yes.
And so as you change, of course, to go back and see something you did years ago is difficult, for me anyway.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just so interesting to me. So, theoretically, Bonnie and Clyde around Thanksgiving.
The end of November, beginning of December.
All right. Okay. It's freezing here then.
It's freezing here
I'm
then.
Sorry.
We'll warm it up. We'll warm up the street.
Yeah.
With some bullets and blood.
Yeah, right.
And it looks like we have a theater, but I'm not at liberty yet to discuss it.
It's all right. Okay, so aside from the Disney Newsies?
Yes, it's funny that you don't know this movie because now that you talk to people in their 30s,
right.
And they can't believe it hasn't been already on stage. It was a movie in the early 90s that Kenny Ortega directed, and it was Christian Bale's movie debut.
Mm.
And it's called Newsies. And Alan Menken wrote the score, and Jack Feldman is the lyricist. Jack Feldman wrote a song you probably heard of. He wrote the lyrics to something called Copacabana. She was a showgirl. Okay, that's Jack.
Right.
Anyway, he's the lyricist, and Harvey Fierstein was brought in to adapt the screenplay for the stage. And so Disney asked me to do this show.
Oh, I do know this movie.
You probably do.
I do.
Yes, right. That's the big song from it.
Wow. Okay, so, and when is this happening?
It's happening right at the end of the summer, right before, in theory, I go from opening Newsies to rehearsing Bonnie and Clyde the next day.
Oh, what a shame.
Isn't that terrible?
Oh, God.
And then, and here's the killer. Right after Bonnie and Clyde opens on Broadway, I just have to go to London. They're forcing me to go to London because they're going to, I did a show, a national tour of Dolly Parton's 9 to 5.
Uh-huh.
And they want to create it for Europe and send it all over the UK and Australia. And so I'm going to have to spend Christmas and New Year's in London.
I'm so sorry.
I know. If not Sarasota, why not London?
London, exactly.
My second favorite place after Sarasota.
Me too, actually.
Yeah.
So then, and then next May or thereabouts, back in Sarasota.
And then next May, I get to come back to the Oslo.
Oh, God.
With Tommy Toon.
Yes.
Yeah, he's actually going to, it's called Tommy Toon Presents
mm-hmm.
State-of-the-Art Song and Dance, starring Noah Racey. Now, Noah Racey is, your audiences won't know him, but he is one of the greatest song and dance men in New York. He's just very difficult to cast. It's just hard nowadays to find shows that need
what he
a
does,
great
right.
40-year-old song and dance man.
Right.
And so we thought, why not just create a show for him?
Oh, how lovely.
And so it'll be a nice reunion for Tommy and I to work together again. And it'll be a nice thing for your audiences to be exposed to some of the greatest dancing that I've ever seen.
Wow.
And it's just going to be, I hate to use the word old-fashioned in selling something, but this is just great old-fashioned song and dance.
Yeah.
And that's
traditional.
What, as I told you, that's what got me interested in this business to begin with.
Right.
Watching those people, the greats.
Right.
And so that's what we want to do. We want to honor the greats through Noah. And it'll be fun to be back at the Oslo then. And that's in I think it opens in May or June. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, I'm going to direct the Broadway revival of another Frank Wildhorn show called Jekyll and Hyde.
Back on Broadway.
Wow. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Good grief. Yes, I think Frank said that he thought, actually, that he might have 3 shows on Broadway, which even for him is a...
Yeah, he was hoping it was going to be Wonderland, Bonnie and Clyde, and Jekyll and Hyde.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, Frank, yes, seems to think more is better. And we're trying to say, Frank, it's not always about quantity. But I love Frank, so what are you going to do?
All right, so, again, I always ask, is there anything you want to say about what it's like to have dedicated an entire life to this work?
Oh, well... all I can think of is what a privilege it is. I just feel like it is such a gift that I can make my living as an artist. Because I know how many people are not doing what they love and what they're passionate about, and I am. So I really am living the dream. Not that sometimes it doesn't feel like a nightmare. But I am literally living the dream, and I just feel blessed and privileged. And there's a pressure, I think, too, that comes with... there's a responsibility that comes with success and good fortune, and that is to pass it on. And that's to behave a certain way. You know, you don't have a right to not be polite, or not to be nice, or not to try to contribute when you leave your house to the world being a better place. I see people that have everything, and the energy they put out into the world is so negative. It just surprises me. How can you act like that when you have everything? It's so bizarre to me. I started about 5 years ago a scholarship at my high school. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun because the first year I did, it's for people that want to make their living in the arts. Mm-hmm. And the first year we had, you know, I think 2 people apply. And so I kind of split it and gave it to both of them. And then the next year it was 3 people. And then it was 5 people. And now I hear this year we're up to like 9 or 10 people that will apply. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me feel good that the word is spreading. And I mean, it's, you know, it's what I can do. It's not going to change their life, but it's just some encouragement.
It might.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it's just encouragement from a professional that went to their high school that says, you know what, this is possible.
Right.
You can make a living in the arts. But also, I feel lucky because as a performer, you're limited to the years that you can still kick high and do splits.
Yeah.
As a director, I'm only limited by my imagination. So God willing, as long as I don't lose that, you can work as long, you know, until you drop dead. I want to do nothing more than, when I die, I want to be in a rehearsal room or an opening night, like Gower Champion. How dramatic was that?
Did he die in opening?
Opening night of 42nd Street.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's a classic. It's just, it's fabled. I mean, that's, yeah, one of the most famous Broadway stories there is.
Right, out with his boots on, huh?
Yeah, a lot of people attribute the success of 42nd Street to that happening. And they made the announcement at the curtain call.
Oh, my God.
Of opening night. Isn't that something?
Yes.
If you didn't know better, you would
think
he orchestrated
it. Right, right.
Because he was a great showman. Yeah. But no, he really did pass away opening night.
Wow.
But I can think of nothing better. I mean, you have to go. So I guess I would either in the kitchen, in the garden, or in the theater. Those are my 3 passions.
Wow. Your cook.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They're like, I think it's the same thing. Gardening, cooking, and directing
shows.
They're
all creating.
It's all the same thing, yeah. When you cook, you go to the grocery store and you cast it.
Right.
You cast your dinner. Right? And then you come home and
a
you get to
this,
create
a little
it.
Of that.
And then, you know, and if you want a revival, you go into the refrigerator and it's leftovers. So I think it's a lot like putting on shows.
You're terrific. This is a great place to stop. Thank you so much,
Jeff. Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you,
Lynn.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, so there you have the charming, the delightful, the multi-talented Jeff Calhoun. I haven't seen Newsies yet. I am so looking forward to it. But I want to go on record as saying Bonnie and Clyde was terrific. It was terrific in every possible way. The performances of Jeremy Jordan, who is up for a Tony for Newsies, and Laura Osnes, who is up for a Tony for Bonnie and Clyde. the set and costume design by Tobin Ost, who is also up for a Tony for Newsies, and of course the direction of Jeff Calhoun. Spectacular, wonderful, as was the score. It was a miscarriage of justice that it got reviewed in the way that it got reviewed and did not get an opportunity to get to the audience that it should have gotten to. So having said that, clearly Newsies is somehow not a miscarriage of justice. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to listen to the unbelievable Jeremy Jordan singing the song that that Jeff alluded to during the interview. This is Santa Fe. This is the prologue version of Santa Fe. And next week when I play Jeremy, I'm going to play his reprise of it, which is even more extraordinary than this. So here, Jeremy Jordan and the cast of Newsies singing Santa Fe.
Them streets down there, they suck the life right out of my old man. Well, they ain't doing that to me.
But everyone wants to come to New York.
You keep your small life in that big city. Give me a big life in a small town. They say folks is dying to get here. Me, I'm dying to get away to a little town out west that's spanking new. And while I ain't never been there, I can see it clear as day. If you want, I bet you could see it too. Close your eyes, come with me, where it's clean and green and pretty, and they went and made a city out of clay. Why, the minute that you get there, folks will walk right up and say, welcome home, son, welcome home to Santa Fe. Planting crops, splitting rails, swapping tales around the fire, except for Sunday when you lie around all day. Soon your friends are more like family, and they's begging you to stay. Ain't that neat? Living sweet in Santa Fe. Hey, no one worries about no gimp leg in Santa Fe. You just hop a Palomino, you're riding style.
Feature me riding in style.
Hey, I bet a few months of clean air you could toss your crotch for good. Santa Fe, you can bet we won't let them bastards beat us. We won't beg no one to treat us fair and square. There's a life that's worth the living, and I'm gonna do my share. Work the land, chase the sun, swim the whole Rio Grande just for fun. Watch me stand,
watch me run.
Hey, hey, don't you know that we's a family? Would I let you down? No way. Just hold on, kid, till that train makes Santa Fe.
I haven't even seen it, and every time I hear this, it makes me cry. So that must be a testament both to the writing and the performance. And so I'm really eager to see it, and I hope that you are too, although I'm also hoping that it wins the Tony. It is also up for the Tony, and it'll be impossible to get a ticket. Okay. So, as I said, next week I'm going to replay the interview I did with Jeremy, and also Tobin Ost, and also Laura Osnes. This is Tony Month at The Lynn Show. Okay, so I'm running out of time, so it's time for me to tell you that my website is thelynshow.com. That's T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E-S-H-O-W www.show.com. And on my website, you can find this interview and every other interview I have ever done. There's a little side panel which tells you categories, actor, director, writer, artist. And you can listen to the kind of person you want to listen to, or you can put a name in and see if I've interviewed that person. You can click on email me and tell me who you'd like me to interview. Or you can critique me, this interview, any interview. You can critique the website. You can find out about the work I do. I'm a psychotherapist, as I said, and I do all my work on the phone these days. You can read the article I wrote called Psychotherapy on the Go and see if that sounds like something interesting for you. Also, up on my website are several photographs of a very young Jeff Calhoun. One with Ann Miller, which you heard him talking about being in the chorus with Ann Miller. He's the young sailor off of her left shoulder, standing behind her, and one with a splendid Dolly Parton. They are adorable, and I know that you will enjoy them. Okay, time to thank the unbelievable Josh Hackney, who, if you have been listening to my show, you know is responsible for everything that I do right technologically. Who shows me how to use whatever it is I need to use, who reminds me when I forget, who walks me through it on the phone, who runs out here and fixes it, who builds things, who fixes things. It's just extraordinary. And if you need that kind of help, any help with electronics, recording, computers, you want Josh Hackney. And you can also get him by going up on my website, clicking on email me, and just saying, I want Josh, and I will get him for you. So as always, I hope that there is something in this show that you can use, something that pleased you, intrigued you, made you laugh, made you cry like me, something that'll bring you back, because I will be back next weekend. As always, I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight, no. I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated. Oh, leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang, no. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into once singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.